Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Overcoming Imposter Anxiety. Move beyond fear of failure and self-doubt to embrace your worthy, capable self. By Ijama Wogu, Ph.D. Narrated by Diana Blue. Publisher's Note. This publication is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering psychological, financial, legal, or other professional services. If expert assistance or counseling is needed, the services of a competent professional should be sought. In this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Your worth and capacity cannot be gauged, nor can they be limited by any metric, any norm, or anyone's expectations. You are worthy and capable beyond measure. Your potential is without bounds. Will you give yourself permission to tap into your infinite greatness? Introduction. We can do hard things. We can overcome challenging circumstances. We can surmount our fears. I learned this after I was involved in a car crash when I was 22. It was a hit and run, to be exact. Someone in a yellow sports car slammed into the back of my vehicle, then disappeared into the night. Round and round, my car spun 3 times on the 7-lane expressway. You hear the common saying, "My life flashed before my eyes." Well, I experienced this firsthand. The positive memories and heartfelt milestones in my life came to my mind in just a few seconds, like an old movie reel. That night, I realized how powerful the human brain is. While these rushing recollections flickered through my thoughts, I was ferociously turning my steering wheel. I had no idea if I was going to collide into oncoming cars or if I was spiraling toward other vehicles in front of me. I thought, so, this is how my life ends. But in seconds, somehow, my car stopped spinning. The smoke cleared, and I ended up with my car facing the forward-moving direction. I spotted the yellow sports car speeding off. The driver entered the nearest exit and fled the scene. No cars were coming, but I needed to get out of the way. So, with haste, I collected myself, watchfully drove off onto the side of the highway, then called for help. The back of my car was demolished. Luckily, I wasn't severely harmed, but I had to visit my neurologist and then receive chiropractic treatments multiple times a week for 2 years. After the weekend of the crash, I had to head back to campus for graduate classes. My mother brought a rental car to the house so I could use it to return to school. With my mom by my side, I loaded the trunk, then approached the driver's side door. I froze. It was as if I'd seen a snake slithering on the steering wheel. I couldn't get in. Panic had overtaken me, and I burst into a deep sob. I felt powerless. Filled with fright, I whispered in a trembling voice, "I can't do this." My mom leaned in to console me while offering words of encouragement. A couple of minutes later, I gathered myself as much as I could. Then finally, I got in. I slowly sat in the driver's seat and buckled my belt. "Bye, Mommy," I uttered in a small, reluctant tone. Then I took a deep breath and, with immense caution, began my hour-and-a-half-long journey back to school. I mark this car crash as one of the hardest and scariest experiences I've ever gone through. Driving again just 2 days after the incident was tough. But in my reflection of the incident, I gained an important takeaway. We face difficult situations, like car accidents or other run-ins that leave us feeling afraid and helpless, But despite these instances, we are capable of overcoming them. The hit and run was out of my control. But what was in my control was how I responded after the event. I had a choice. I could either succumb to the fear or surmount it. I remember this wisdom now when I face all sorts of challenging situations, and I want to offer it to you as you embark on your journey to overcome imposter anxiety. You can let fear get in your way, especially when you experience the anxiety of self-doubt. You know the feeling. I'm talking about those moments when you feel inadequate, unworthy, incompetent, undeserving, or inferior because you fear failure or being exposed as a fraud. You become discouraged from moving toward promising paths in your life. After that hit and run, I never wanted to enter another automobile again. But I can imagine what divorcing from driving would have cost me. I had places to go, people to see, things to do, and aspirations to actualize. I was terrified of driving again, sure, but I needed to do it anyway. This turned out to be a powerful lesson as I contended with crushing anxiety as a grad student. For 2 years, I toiled with the most overwhelming feelings of self-doubt I'd ever endure. By sharing the moments when imposter anxiety has hit me the hardest, my hope is that you'll recognize enough of your experience to know this book can help. When imposter anxiety hit me hard. I vividly recall one afternoon when I returned to my apartment after class. Like a dead man walking, I paced over to my bed and plopped on it. I hated that mattress. It was so uncomfortable. But I lay there, glaring at the ceiling, as the embarrassing recollections of my silence in class replayed over and over in my mind. I was so scared to speak in that class that I barely uttered a word. I was one of the 15 students who were admitted into a program ranked among the top 3 in the nation. In my cohort were peers who came with a wealth of knowledge and lived experiences, all of which I thought were superior to my own. Despite my previous accomplishments in college, making good grades, achieving wild success as a student leader, and gaining acceptance into a reputable master's program, I still felt completely out of place. I frequently thought, "What on earth am I doing here?" I didn't think I had the smarts and know-how to demonstrate my value. I assumed they probably chose me to meet a diversity quota, not because I deserve it. Carrying this load of shame, I tussled through the same routine ordeal for each course I took. It went something like this. I enter a class. The professor delivers her discourse. She invites her students to share thoughts on a topic. My classmates shoot their hands in the air. Most of them offer their reflections. My internal battle begins. The pressure intensifies with each passing hour. Everyone has spoken except me. I want to share my perspectives, but the hand of fear holds my mouth shut. Will my classmates side-eye my opinions? Am I just taking up space in this highly coveted program? I had it drilled into my head that my ideas lacked substance, so I kept quiet. Why couldn't I just raise my hand to voice my views? All the while I refrained from talking, it was to protect myself from appearing as a phony. But in my mind, my silence still exposed me as such. It was like a catch-22, damned if I did, and damned if I didn't. I wanted to break away from this vicious cycle, so once in a while, I'd set expectations for myself the night before each class. My plan was to raise my hand to share my ideas at least once. I can do this. There's nothing to fear. I've got this. Achieving this single objective required plenty of positive self-talk to muster up enough courage to make just one quick remark. To my surprise, I met my goal for a day or two, but it was short-lived. I reverted to my mute state, and it became my daily ritual. The negative thoughts in my head relentlessly dissuaded me from participating in class. I badly needed the work in the book you're now listening to unlearn self-limiting notions and adopt empowering truths about my identity. But at the time, I wasn't aware of how to do it. So I ended up repeating the awful sequence of showing up, speechless and uncomfortable as ever, for all my 3-hour-long classes. Now, I'm not shy. I like to express myself. I appreciated my graduate school experience. So why in the world did I feel like a complete fraud? As time progressed, I grew more and more curious about this question. I began exploring a few factors, and here's what I discovered. There were several triggers that sparked my reaction, like my environment, the kind of support I had, and internalized beliefs. The classroom format was new for me. The environment was competitive, and the pressure to meet high expectations was a factor. My classmates were supportive, for the most part, but a more invested approach from those holding power in those spaces, like my professors, could have gone a long way to empower me. I also felt outnumbered as one of the few people of color. And much of the views about my adequacy and belonging were shaped by false narratives I had subconsciously assumed over time. I had absorbed inaccurate messages about who I was and what I deserved, and my skepticism about my capabilities was a cloak, concealing the person I desired to be in that setting. These triggers altogether affected how I moved through my master's program, like the times I withheld useful insights my classmates could have learned from. You too could be provoked by multiple forces, some in your control and some outside it. But just as I learned how to overcome my triggers, you can do the same. You can become privy to the strategies for moving beyond fear and self-doubt to fully embrace your worthy, capable self. Why I wrote this book. As I discover how to work with different triggers, I awakened to the fact that many people struggle with the same sort of experience. This is true no matter the situation, whether this fear strikes at school, work, home, or in social circles when it comes to wellness, finances, and relationships. I started working with talented individuals who struggled with seeing themselves as enough. The problem with feeling inadequate is that you end up sabotaging your pursuits when in fact you are enough and hold enormous potential to thrive. As someone who is passionate about the personal success of others, I began seeking ways to help others from all sorts of backgrounds to move past fear and self-doubt to live the lives they crave. I started speaking at conferences on the topic. I created trainings about it for various universities I worked for. And later, I began flirting with the idea of writing a book. That intention fell into a coma once I entered the rat race of life. But one event in particular resuscitated this idea. It's time to get to typing. This realization came to me as I gazed over at what looked like the longest after-session crowd. I had just finished giving a talk to incoming MBA students at Rice University, where attendees who wanted to connect with me waited afterward, forming an extensive single-file line. I just wanted to tell you, this was so helpful. Thank you so much. Most of them professed as they reached for a handshake or a hug. Several shared their stories with me, and some fished for feedback to address their own dealings with self-doubt. The eye-opener for me was not just the visual of the lengthy line of people anticipating a chance to express their appreciation, but also the outpouring of heartfelt narratives and solution-seeking inquiries. Writing this book could no longer remain just an idea. It had to become a reality. I must move forward with it. I knew. But despite knowing this, I danced with my own doubts about this project. I am not a psychologist. I am simply a student of life with an appetite for understanding the experience of fear and self-doubt. My commitment to helping people overcome this reaction also stems from my vision of the world. I imagine a life where we all live out our biggest ambitions and pursue our infinite potential. But to lean into this dream, we need the proper ingredients to get there. Self-efficacy and a sense of self-worth. With the solution for moving toward my vision in my toolbox, I began the process. Creating this book involved pulling from my own experiences with imposter anxiety. I also included recommended solutions from psychology research and other scholarly works on the topic. I recognize, though, powerful insights about fear and self-doubt are also inspired by those outside of mental health professions. This includes former First Lady Michelle Obama, who recounted her experience with imposter anxiety during her 2018 talk at the Anderson School in London. I had to work to overcome that question that I always ask myself, am I good enough? That's a question that has dogged me for a good part of my life. Despite this thought, Mrs. Obama pushed through, accomplishing so much over the years and continuously inspiring the masses with her story. My friend Emma is another reference on the topic. I don't know if I'm expert enough, she said. Initially, Emma was nervous about starting a YouTube channel, but she pressed on anyway, sidestepping her self-doubt and establishing her very own show on the platform. Famous or not, a person's experience with overcoming imposter anxiety holds transformative power. It was, therefore, important for me to include personal accounts of individuals from various walks of life, because it reveals a common link connecting us all. Our experiences with fear and self-doubt. Who am I? People have all sorts of perspectives when it comes to overcoming self-doubt, but this book will highlight my own. It was through my lens that this resource was written, so it's important to know who I am. My identity, personal accounts, and worldviews shaped the contents and the approach of this book. So, here's what to know about me. I am a Black woman living in an upper-income suburban household in Houston, Texas. I was born in Lagos, Nigeria, and immigrated to the United States at age 4. I grew up in New York City and Augusta, Georgia, in a two-parent, middle-income household. Having schooled, worked, and lived in Atlanta, Georgia between the ages of 17 and 31, and with the culture embedded in me, I considered this city a hometown. I am the daughter of two highly educated parents, a middle child with 5 siblings, and am the mother of 3 children under the age of 13. I consider myself open-minded, structured, self-aware, and intuitive, and I'm an extroverted introvert. I'm a credentialed leadership coach, holding a bachelor's degree in psychology and sociology, a master's degree in college student affairs administration, and a doctorate in counseling. I'm a product of public schooling from my first grade to my terminal degree, and I've been an educator and administrator in both public and private higher education settings. After about 8 years as an employee, I felt called to entrepreneurship and to helping clients achieve their life, leadership, career, and business goals. I do so in a variety of ways, including speaking and coaching. I have a keen interest in social psychology, and I enjoy creating and providing resources for personal development. I have experienced maltreatment in the forms of xenophobia, racism, sexism, colorism, ageism, adultism, and classism. And I'm an ongoing overcomer of these imposter anxiety-triggering forms of oppression. I also recognize my unearned privileges as non-disabled, straight, Christian, married, and a United States citizen. I am committed to lifelong learning and educating myself about the lives of others to build my empathy. On an ongoing basis, I work to decondition my mind from self-limiting notions so I can fill it with positive truths about who I am. I'm opposed to oppressive structures in all of their forms, and I believe people are gifted and whole. My guiding values are diversity, freedom, authenticity, compassion, wisdom, purpose, and love. I wrote this book during the latter part of the COVID-19 pandemic, a time when a global prevalence of anxiety was increased and the world was undergoing a major shift in the way we think about and pursue life. Theoretical approaches. Because of who I am and what I believe, a couple of theoretical frameworks were important and appropriate for me to use as guides for producing this book. These are philosophies of liberation psychology and cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. In exploring the root of imposter anxiety, I recognized external factors, like oppressive social environments, as being primary contributors of the experience. Traditional psychology often fails to acknowledge the role of these factors, but this book won't. Much of the sentiment around imposter syndrome tends to point the finger at those experiencing it without calling out toxic and abusive spaces and structures this reaction is sparked by. To address this, I've incorporated liberation psychology, which points out the influences of systems of social oppression. Liberation psychology has two broad aims: healing and freedom. One of my goals in this book is to help you identify unhealed emotional wounds that produce imposter anxiety. These include harms that were inflicted upon you from oppressive environments. By identifying these contributing factors and doing the work to overcome imposter anxiety, you can experience greater freedom and, therefore, a chance to lean into your authentic self. Liberation psychology also integrates storytelling, challenges the status quo, and advocates for disconnecting from self-limiting beliefs. Receiving and giving support are also part of liberation psychology, and the approach acknowledges both nature and nurture factors of your experiences with self-doubt. It encourages self-compassion and rest to counter anxiety-provoking ways of being, like perfectionism and hustle culture. It recognizes all people as capable and worthy, and it supports the reclaiming of personal power and the pursuit of a boundless life. Liberation psychology also encompasses cognitive behavioral methods, which I'll use to suggest mind shift insights and action steps for overcoming imposter anxiety. CBT emphasizes how your thoughts shape your feelings and actions. For example, if you think you are incompetent, you may react with feelings of fear or anxiety. This can lead to behaviors like silence or avoidance of certain situations. But if you believe you're capable, you may respond with curiosity or eagerness. You approach your goals instead of avoiding them. So an aim of CBT is to reframe your thoughts and feelings to ultimately change your behavior. This way, you can reduce your self-doubts and do the things you desire. What you'll learn. This book is your ultimate guide for understanding and addressing fear and self-doubt. I've included answers to frequently asked questions I've collected on the topic during my guest appearances on podcasts, coaching sessions, and speaking engagements. In this book, the following questions will be answered, as you may be curious about them too. Is this an experience I'm really having? Can I be a confident person and still deal with imposter anxiety? Does my identity have anything to do with it? Are my feelings of inadequacy my fault? Is self-doubt a sign of humility? What will happen if I don't address it? Will I ever get over this reaction? You'll learn the ins and outs of imposter anxiety, who it affects, what it looks like, and where, when, and why it happens. You'll see how your biology and your environment influence the experience. You'll understand how factors like competition, perceived worthiness, fear of failure, past traumatic events, perceived differences, ego, and your levels of support prompt this reaction. You'll also learn of the surprising gifts of self-doubt. Most importantly, you'll build an overcomer's mindset and gain transformative strategies to navigate the experience in the best ways possible. You'll find places to check in with yourself throughout the chapters, and I encourage you to keep a journal as you go through these parts, Writing down your reflections allows you to think deeply about your responses to the prompts. This way, you make the most of your listening experience and you remain invested in doing the work to move beyond imposter anxiety. You'll also find some free tools available at newharbinger.com/51086. How this book will benefit you. I had to overcome imposter anxiety to remain the course in fulfilling many of my life goals and activities, like speaking up in my doctoral program, becoming an entrepreneur, and initiating contact with my book publisher. Since you're listening to this book, it tells me you want to go after your dreams, too. I urge you to do so because here's what could happen if you don't. Toxic beliefs can guide you, and you leave room for past hurts to rule your actions. You risk feeling powerless, unworthy, undeserving, and incapable. You could operate under the assumption that your difference is a disadvantage. You gamble with feeling insecure, isolated, and insufficient, with unmitigated imposter anxiety leading you down a path of misery and regret. But when you use the tools provided in this book, here's what you can look forward to. Expect to raise your hand more, speak up more, and take charge of your life. You get to revive your personal agency. You'll expand yourself, occupy space, embrace your unique qualities, and live more courageously and authentically. You'll know you are worthy, belonging, deserving, and capable. You'll feel optimistic, assured, and more comfortable in your own skin. And you get to fulfill your potential and pursue your biggest aspirations while doing your part to change the world for the better. You can redirect the trajectory of your life in all these ways and more. So, consider this question. How would you be different if fear and self-doubt weren't factors in your life? I wish I had a book like this early on in grad school. It would have been the saving grace I needed to step into my highest and truest self during that cherished period of my life. You are in for a real, life-changing treat when you apply the information from this book. The knowledge I'll share with you helped me triumph over my own self-doubts over time. It also equipped many clients from different walks of life to move past similar challenges. As you progress along this journey, I urge you to use your newfound awareness to help others see their own value and believe in their capacity to live their desired life. The opportunity to overcome imposter anxiety is ahead. If you're ready, I've got your hand. Let's jump right in. Chapter 1. An Experience of Fear and Self-Doubt. 4 out of 5. The number of people who deal with imposter syndrome can reach this astounding rate, with up to 82% of all people experiencing this reaction at some point in their lives. But for this predicament to be so prevalent in the daily walks of so many, what is it exactly, and where in the world did it come from? Self-doubt has existed for as long as humans have, and for multiple millennia, we've met fear in all its forms, including the fear of being outed as a fraud. However, 1978 was the year when words were given to this reaction. Two clinical psychologists, Dr. Pauline Clance and Dr. Suzanne Imes, coined the phrase imposter phenomenon. I am reminded of LL Cool J's unforgettable chant, "Something Like a Phenomenon," from his 1997 Billboard-topping hit. In the song, he raps about his rendezvous with a lady friend, naming it a phenomenon. In this book, however, I'll guide you in exploring your own rendezvous, though not as sexy, with a different phenomenon, the imposter phenomenon. What names have you heard people use to describe this experience? Maybe you've heard folks call it an inferiority complex, self-sabotage, or the inner critic. The more familiar expression, though, is imposter syndrome. But let's take a moment to inspect the words imposter and syndrome. One thing we know about this phenomenon is that it's experienced by highly capable individuals who hold enormous...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?